On August 31, 2011, I interviewed Robert Archer, President and CEO of Great Panther Silver Limited, with respect to his views on Great Panther's then-current operations and prospects. This interview is divided into four parts. It is subject to the important disclaimers and disclosures found at the end of this podcast. Headquartered in Vancouver, British Columbia, Great Panther Silver Limited, TSX symbol GPR, Amex symbol GPL, together with its subsidiaries, engages primarily in the exploration for and production of silver in Mexico. The company holds a 100% interest in two silver gold mines, one located in the Mexican state of Durango and the other in the Mexican state of Guanajuato. On July 18, Great Panther announced the acquisition of what it believes to be four prospective mining concessions totaling 1,514 hectares. Bob Archer, a geologist, co-founded Great Panther. He has been its president and CEO since 2004. Bob has over 30 years' experience working with mining companies in North America, and in that time has held and holds senior management positions with junior mining companies. Including Great Panther, he currently serves as a director of three mining companies. I am particularly pleased that Bob has agreed to be interviewed by me on behalf of StockResearchPortal.com. In part one of this interview, Bob discussed in concept the current gold price and gold mining stocks prices and the current silver price and silver mining stocks prices, his views on the prospective physical silver and gold price trends at August 31, 2011, and Mexico and the Mexican states of Durango and Guanajuato, where Great Panther operates its two silver mines. Obviously, Bob's current views expressed throughout this entire interview may change as events and conditions affecting either Great Panther or the price of silver or gold change over time. Parts 2 to 4 of this interview deal with Great Panther's business model, corporate governance, business value drivers, specifically respects to Great Panther's business and Great Panther's prospective risks and opportunities. Bob, thanks once again for joining me today.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Okay, now the first question I have in this segment of the interview is I'd like to, if you would, to ask you to describe Great Panther's corporate structure. Which jurisdictions Great Panther pays through its subsidiaries and at the head office its principal principally pays its income tax, and whether you face currency movement restrictions of any kind?
Well, with regards to our corporate structure, Great Panther Silver Limited obviously is a parent company that's registered here in Canada and listed on the TSX and the NYSE Amex. Below Great Panther, we have a subsidiary company in Mexico called Minera Mexicana El Rosario, and that company holds all of the assets in Mexico, and so it's kind of like an umbrella company as far as that goes. Below Great Panther, below El Rosario, are two operating subsidiaries. One in Guanajuato, which is Minera Villa Seca, and the other one in Durango, which is Minerals de Durango. And those two companies are responsible for the actual operations at their two respective mines. And so there are a number of tax advantages for doing it that way. And also in holding all the assets in the non-operating entities, it also protects our assets from any potential legal action arising out of the operating subsidiaries. So it seems to be an effective way for us to operate in Mexico. And with respect to taxes, we haven't paid any income taxes yet. We potentially could pay some in 2012, and then going forward, that was likely to increase a little bit in Mexico. Of course, we haven't paid any tax in Canada, and we have sufficient carry forward tax losses here that we're not likely to pay taxes in Canada for a while. We only have about 15 people or so in our head office in Vancouver, and everyone else is in Mexico.
Okay. Now, in the quarter ended June 30, I noted reading your report that you experienced delays in concentrate shipments, and that those were attributed to quote-unquote metal trader smelters. Now, I'd like to understand the relationship between metal trader smelters and why the concentrate shipments were delayed, and whether you've experienced similar things in the past.
Sure. First off, just a clarification. The metal traders are separate from the smelters. The traders are essentially companies who trade commodities, both physical and in the marketplace as well, trading futures and whatnot. And so there are probably about a dozen or so that we talk to in this regard that are working in the metals side of things as opposed to soft commodities. And so these traders will buy our concentrates, and then they sell them in turn to smelters around the world. And in some cases, that may be just a direct relationship where they're just basically passing on our concentrates as is. In other cases, they may actually blend our concentrates with concentrates from other mines in order to achieve a specific mix of commodities that are desired by a particular smelter. So, for example, we produce three different concentrates from our two mines. The Guanajuato concentrate is strictly a pyrite concentrate with gold and silver, and our Topian mine produces a lead concentrate which has the majority of the silver and gold, as well as a separate zinc concentrate which has minor amounts of silver and gold. And the lead and the zinc concentrates from Topia are sent to a metal trader with a facility in the port of Manzanillo, where they get blended with concentrates from other mines in Mexico and then shipped overseas to Asia, to Asian smelters. The Guanajuato concentrates, on the other hand, where we've recently experienced these issues, have been going to a port on the east coast of Mexico at Veracruz and shipped overseas to South Africa to a smelter there. And that's wherein we've run into the issue. It's a little awkward for us to sort of speculate on what's actually happening, at that smelter and why we're being squeezed out. It could be because they're getting a surplus of shipments from other mining companies around the world. And, if our contract is small enough, then we're the ones that get squeezed. So, because of our relationship with our metal trader, that's who we have the contract with. We don't have direct dealings with the smelter, and we don't have a direct line of communication there. So basically all we've been told is that, the smelter is not accepting the same quantities of concentrate from us. And so that's why we've had a build-up in our inventory at Guanajuato, which then meant that we had to find alternative buyers for that concentrate. And because it's a different type of concentrate than the lead and zinc concentrates that Topia produces, we can't necessarily send the Guanajuato concentrates to the same smelters that are accepting the Topia concentrates. So we have different buyers in this regard. And so in some respects, it's difficult to generalize. All smelters are not the same. And so we have been looking at alternatives, and we have found alternatives such that we have already started to reduce our inventory, and our schedule at the moment shows that by the end of this year, the drawdown will be sufficient such that, as well as being able to ship our regular production, that we will have drawn down the inventory to what we consider to be normal levels. by the end of this year. So the impact on revenues and net income that we saw in Q2 is just a temporary thing. You know, it did not affect production. We have not slowed down our production in any way, shape, or form. We're continuing with all our growth plans and our expansion. And so the drop in revenues that we saw in Q2 will be made up in Q3 and Q4, such that everything should balance out by the end of the year. And certainly it's not something that you know, potential investors or shareholders should be concerned about. It'll just mean that you know, quarter over quarter, the numbers won't be as smooth as they as they normally would be. A little bit of up and down, but as I say, any shortfall in Q2 will be made up in Q2 and Q4.
Okay. Well, you know that my background is accounting, not mining. But not every listener may. So this question may or may not make sense to you, but. Is the concentrate that you generate in the form of sort of a doré bar type of output, or what physical form does the concentrate take?
The way I like to describe it for people who haven't seen a concentrate is like it's like a wet metallic sand. It's very very granular. Yeah, I mean, to look at it, it looks almost like a mud, but when you look at it in detail, it's just like a very fine-grained sand, but metallic. You know, it'll shine under the light, but it's just, yes, it's loose. It's the consistency of a fine sand.
Okay, and just so I understand everything you've said in the past couple of answers, and I think I do, but you could confirm it for me, mm-hmm. I know from what you said that you produced the concentrate. So if the metal prices all stayed exactly the same over a 9-month period, or a period it'll take you to get your inventory back in line, then revenue that you did not have in the second quarter will appear as extra revenue in the third and fourth quarters. Is that fair to start with?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, so by the end of the year, everything should have balanced out.
Okay, and if let's take silver as just one of the metals, if the silver price increases in the third and fourth quarter, your revenues will be enhanced from what they would have been on an annual basis. And if the silver price were to drop, your revenue would be less, because your revenue is going to be a function of when the concentrate is actually shipped from you and sold. Is that correct?
That is correct, with a caveat or a clarification that the way the payment schedule works, and it's different for every contract, but typically, you know, we would be paid on the average price for either a 1-month or a 2-month period following delivery. So it's not, you know, if we ship concentrates today, we're not paid on today's spot price. You know, we're paid on the average spot price for the next 2 months, you know, following delivery. So it very much reflects, you know, what the prices are going to be going forward. So it's from that respect, it's sometimes a little bit difficult to plan, because of course, you know, our crystal ball is no clearer than anyone else's, and so there's always, I mean, we do get paid a certain amount up front, and again, that varies from contract to contract. It can be 80%, 90%, but the balance and the final reconciliation comes, that calculation comes, you know, through the average prices of the subsequent couple of months. So by the time that final payment is made, if silver prices have gone up, then we get a nice big check at the end of it. But if silver prices have gone down substantially, we could actually be in a position where, you know, where we would owe a little bit of money, you know, back to the buyer.
Okay, that's very helpful, and I thank you for that. Now, Great Panther reports its financial position and results in Canadian dollars. You obviously generate the substantive part of your revenue in U.S. dollars, because silver and gold are denominated that way, and you I presume you pay a large percentage of your operating costs in Mexican pesos, and you're a Canadian company. So what do you see as Great Panther's foreign exchange risks and opportunities going forward?
Yes, that's something that fluctuates certainly over time, given the three different currencies. I mean, we have very little actual expenses in Canadian dollars, as you would appreciate. As you point out, a large part of our expenses are in pesos. Some of our contracts that we deal with, for example, drilling contracts, are often paid in U.S. dollars. You know, the payments that come to us, our revenues can be in either U.S. dollars or in pesos, depending on the contract. And so, for example, if we're selling to a Mexican buyer, they may wish to pay us in pesos because that's where they're generating their revenue. But if we're selling to an international company, then they may choose to pay us in dollars. And so we try to keep exchanges to a minimum, because you always lose a little bit on every transaction whenever you do that. We've seen gains and losses in past quarters. They're usually not huge. And it's largely just a function of the ratio between the Mexican peso and the U.S. dollar, and so as the dollar gets devalued a little bit, then that actually means that if we're getting paid in pesos, for example, then we're getting fewer pesos. But if we're getting paid in dollars, then that could be better for us. Because the commodities are denominated in dollars, it's also a function of the rate at which the commodity prices are going up versus the rate that the U.S. dollar might be going down relative to the other currencies. So it does become a little bit of a complicated picture. And does vary quarter over quarter. And as I say, sometimes a bit of a gain, sometimes a bit of a loss. But generally, not too extreme either way.
And here's a quick question, and it could result in if we elected to the 1 or 2 hour conversation, but just in 30 seconds or less. I noted that in the last quarter, Great Panther began to report under the International Financial Reporting Standards. And I've got two questions about that, because I know about it and I've read a lot of the issues. But two questions are, how big and expensive a deal did it turn out to be to Great Panther to do that conversion? And secondly, if you know Bob, and to be fair, you may not, how much difference did switching over to the International Financial Reporting Standards make on your reported earnings for the quarter?
To answer the first question, the conversion was something that took place over a period of about 2 years. So it was a bit of a gradual process, and we started to plan as soon as we could for that and start the transition. Overall, I'd say it wasn't overly expensive. I would guess we did have to bring in some consultants and so on, an extra time on the audit. So I guess it was in a few tens of thousands, maybe 50,000, something of that sort of nature. So it's not overly huge given the size of the company now. And as far as the difference that it made from December 2010 to first quarter of 2011, it did make we had a one-time gain of about $5 million. So that was a positive thing, obviously, and that was largely just a function of how capital expenditures were treated, and so that did reflect in our first quarter 2011 financials.
Okay, now I'd like to really turn to what I think is some of the important stuff of the underlying value of the business, being the business drivers, the revenue side of your business you really don't have any control over because it's driven off market prices of silver, gold, and the base metals you sell. And we've already talked about the issues of, or lack thereof, of the country and state risk. The thing I'd like to talk to you about is your current production capacity and where you see your production capacity going over the next 12 months or however long you can prospectively look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the top of mine, which is the smaller of the two, we've expanded our plant capacity early this year, first quarter of this year, such that the plant's up to about 270 tons per day in terms of capacity now. And I guess on average we're probably running around 200 tons a day at the moment. So there's still room there for increased production from the mines. And that's something that we're working on continually. You know, I'd like to think that over the next 12 months or by the end of next year, that we can have the plant running at full capacity on a full-time basis. So there's certainly room for more growth there at Topia. And at Guanajuato, the mine has not yet, since we've been rehabilitating it, has not yet run at full capacity, considering that the plant itself has a nominal capacity of about 1,200 tons per day. And you know, I say nominal in as much as we've never actually had it running at that rate. So until we get to that point, it's difficult to say if it, you know, if it will be 1,200 or if it's 1,100 or 1,300 or exactly what the number will be. But right now we're running it on a somewhat compressed schedule of sort of a week on, week off. And while it's running at about 900 to 1,000 tons per day. But overall, if you average that out sort of on a number of operating days per year, we're running at a rate of about 600 tons per day at Guanajuato right now. When, as I say, the plant capacity is somewhere close to 1,200. So really, it's running at about half capacity, and our plan is to get that running at full capacity by the end of 2012. And our plan to do that is to increase production from the existing operations there at Guanajuato and potentially adding a bit from perhaps from San Ignacio as well as we develop that that project. So there's lots, you know, lots of growth opportunity there over the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay, now clearly a business driver has to be, as I see things anyway, the maintenance and preferably growth as you go forward in your reserves and resources. And I know that you have postponed, from what I've read, an update of at least part of Great Panther's reserves and resources until this fall. And it'd be helpful if you could just comment briefly on that and, you know, the reasons and so forth and where you see that going.
Yeah, the main reason for that postponement was just as we started to drill up the San Ignacio, and really it was a new discovery that we made last fall, 2010. We perhaps, in hindsight, maybe we've got a little bit ahead of ourselves in wanting to get some indication out to the market as to, you know, what the potential was for the project. And we thought we could get a preliminary resource out, you know, fairly quick. But what we discovered when we started to run the statistics on the numbers that we had from the first dozen or so holes was that there was a huge amount of variability in the grade. And from a statistical standpoint, the database was not large enough for us to be able to determine, you know, what populations we could use with any degree of confidence, in saying, the grade should be X, Y, or Z. So we had to kind of back off on our timing there in order to drill additional holes in order to increase our confidence level, as to, what kind of grade ranges we could use in our estimate. For a new resource for the project, and so that's why we put it off until the fall. So we are working on it right now. We have been drilling continuously all this year, and in fact we will be adding a second drill on the project in September, and then that will effectively double the pace of the of the results and help us to move forward with a new resource sometime in the fourth quarter, I'm guessing.
Okay, now I've made some calculations, Bob, which I may very well not have made correctly, but the calculations I made suggest to me that your gold credits in the second quarter just ended are actually quite important to your net cost per ounce of silver produced. And that leads me, first of all, I'd like to know in your response to this whether that's correct in concept anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then secondly, that says to me that the uniformity of grade of both silver and gold in your mills going forward has to be very important to your end cost per ounce of silver produced. And if I've got that right, there was a reported drop in grades in the quarter ended June 30, and I would have thought that it's important to know whether you expect those reduced grades to continue in the near term, and what the gold and silver grades prospectively might be going forward.
Yeah. Well, at Guanajuato, for example, the gold component is actually about 30% versus 70% silver by revenue, and so it's very, very important at Guanajuato. Less so at Topia. There's really not much of a gold component at Topia at all. From that standpoint, the gold component is very important for us. As far as the grades go, we did experience a bit of a drop in grades at Guanajuato over the first half of this year, and that's largely a function of the ore body. The grades are highly variable at Guanajuato, and that's just Mother Nature. There's not a lot we can do about that. And there are going to be times when we get into high-grade zones, and times when we get into low-grade zones. And our ability to predict that is largely a function of the drilling information that we have, and it's in some areas we have better information than others, but also because we're operating at depth underground, we don't always have the time or the ability to obtain that sort of information to the degree that we might like, and so we have to just sort of go ahead anyways. And if the grade changes on us unexpectedly, we just have to accept that as is, and there's really not a lot we can do about it. So, the news release that we put out yesterday, for example, indicates that in areas where we have been able to do a little bit of detailed drilling, we often do find that there certainly are some very high grades, in fact, bonanza grades in this case, that are still there, and in fact, and within very close proximity of where we're mining right now. And those kinds of grades, multi kilos per ton of silver, and tens of grams of gold per ton, are certainly there. And as we get into those areas to develop those areas, that will certainly serve to increase the overall average grades that we're seeing coming out of the mine. So on a day-to-day basis, grades can vary quite considerably. That tends to smooth out, the longer you take it out over, month, quarter, annually, that type of thing. And we try to maintain the average, as close as possible to our budget in order to help to improve the predictability from that standpoint. Another aspect that comes into it, you mentioned cost, is that one of the peculiar things about the silver business is that silver mining industry is that we tend to report our costs in a cash cost per ounce of silver net of the byproduct credits, and it's a little bit of an awkward way to do it because it's not really a true reflection of what your costs actually are. And the reason for that is that because it's reported net of the byproduct credits, the larger the credit you're getting from your byproducts, the lower your apparent cash cost per ounce of silver. So there are some companies out there, and I won't mention any names, but they're actually reporting a negative cash cost per ounce. And they're really, the reason for that is that they're making more money on their byproducts than they are on silver, which means they're not really a primary silver producer, and they're not going to get the same sort of leverage in their share price that a primary silver producer would with respect to silver prices. So, you can appreciate from producing anything, widgets, it doesn't matter what you make, that it's impossible to have a negative cost of production. That means that somebody's actually paying you to produce it, which doesn't exist. It's a little bit awkward in that sense where, people look at cash costs and say, oh, it's $2, it's $5, it's $10. But they, they don't fully appreciate the rationale behind that. And, really what our guys, and I think pretty much all miners around the world look at when they're operating is not a cash cost per ounce, it's a cost per ton. How much does it cost you to extract and process a ton of ore? And that's really what's reflective of your cash costs. And our cash costs at site have not changed for the last couple of years. So, contrary to what the cash cost per ounce might be indicating, our on-site costs really haven't changed. The cash cost per ounce is largely driven by the byproduct credits, and it's also a function of grade. So that as your grade goes down, your apparent cash cost per ounce goes up because you're getting fewer ounces out of each ton. And so it's a sensitive thing, and it's often difficult to explain to people without making it look like you're making excuses for why these apparent costs are going up when in fact they're really not.
Well, I think that's both an important and frankly a very good summary of some things that our listeners ought to seriously think about when they're analyzing Great Panther and the Great Panther type of companies or peer group companies. I'm going to end this part of the interview at this point, and we'll pick it up in the fourth and last part. But once again, I very much appreciate your time, and I know you're busy, and we'll do one more part, and then you can get back to work.
Okay, sounds good, Ian. I'll talk to you.
Important disclaimers and disclosures. StockResearchPortal.com provides this podcast interview solely for informational purposes. This interview does not constitute, nor should be construed to constitute, general or specific trading or investment advice. Neither should it be taken to endorse or recommend the business, products, services, or securities of any industry or company mentioned. This interview does not constitute a solicitation to trade in any securities mentioned and may contain forward-looking information which inherently is subject to risks, results, or events that may not be realized or occur as predicted. Prior to its release, this podcast was reviewed and approved by Robert Archer, both on his own behalf and on behalf of Great Panther. That said, the accuracy or completeness of the contents of this podcast are not guaranteed. Neither I, Ian R. Campbell, Stock Research DD Inc., the owner of StockResearchPortal.com, StockResearchPortal.com, Robert Archer, nor Great Panther, will be liable for any damages relating to your use of the information provided herein. Neither I nor any investment account I control currently owns Great Panther shares, options, or warrants. That said, from time to time, I and other directors, officers, employees of Stock Research DD Inc., or members of their family, as well as persons interviewed, may have long or short positions in securities mentioned, and may make purchases and sales of those securities in the open market or otherwise. Great Panther is a paid advertiser on StockResearchPortal.com. Neither I nor Stock Research DD Inc. have received compensation in connection with this interview beyond said advertising fees. Please refer to StockResearchPortal.com's interview policy, available for review on its website. Stock Research DD Inc. owns copyright to this podcast. Stock Research DD Inc. hereby grants an unrestricted license to use or disseminate this podcast only in whole, never in part, and only if all spoken disclosures and disclaimers are included.